tribal advocates that I spoke with said that ORCA has shown great improvement in issues that previously had some pretty significant issues prior to the passing of the state-specific legislation, which occurred in 2020.
What are the takeaways that you hope readers and listeners get from this story?
Issues affecting Indian country are really important. Even if you were to not care about what happens to Native communities, some of the very basic tenets upon which the Constitution and the United States government have been built have been its relations to Native tribes as a nation-to-nation relationship, and a willingness by the Supreme Court to subvert precedent, hundreds of years of it, shows some pretty alarming trends with how the Supreme Court may address other issues that are fundamental to our democracy.
Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up? Anything we didn't get to mention?
There is a fantastic podcast by Rebecca Nagel called This Land. There's two seasons, and it's specific to this issue. So if you're a podcast fan, I highly recommend giving it a listen.
Very cool. Well, Melanie, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Yeah, Althea, thank you. I appreciate it.
That was Melanie Henshaw, the Indigenous Affairs reporter for Street Roots, talking with me about her new article, Protecting Native Children: Tribal Sovereignty is at Stake in a Challenge to the Indian Child Welfare Act Before the Supreme Court. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee will meet on Tuesday, June 20th at 5:30 p.m. via public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the virtual meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit
Here
our website.
Here at KBOO, we honor the indigenous people whose traditional and ancestral homelands we stand on, the Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Tomwater, Wetlala Bands of the Chinook, the Tualatin Kalapuya, and many other indigenous tribes and nations of the region of the Willamette River and that great river known as Shwaneku, Wimal, Nishaiwana, and Columbia. Many names for the living water force that has sustained this region for countless generations and provided phenomenal life to our blessed ecosystems. We believe it is important to acknowledge the ancestors of this land and to recognize that we are here because of the sacrifices forced upon them. In remembering these communities, we honor their legacy, their lives, and their descendants with the forming of relationships to each other and the living world.
The following program is a rebroadcast. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred. Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Portland.
You are listening to a digital Indigenous radio show. All across Turtle Island, turn up your radios and decolonize. This is Rose City Native Radio.
Can you tell the end in first then?
Hello, hello. You're listening to Rose City Native Radio. I'm your host, Jack Malmstrom. Got a great show for you today. Music, teepee talk, and more. That's right. Reunited, and it feels so good. That's right. We got DJ Yellow Horse in the studio with us. And myself, in the studio at the same time in the same place.
We're back.
We're back. We got so much good stuff for you today. So much good stuff. Starting out the show. Oh man. We really have a lot here. Let's see. Starting out the show, it's my favorite song ever. It's my personal anthem. This is Snotty Nose Rez Kids with Long Hair Don't Care on Rose City Native Radio.
An Indian without his flow. So if one more cuffer them up to me and tell me to get my hair cut, you know what I'ma say? Long hair don't care.
When I got my first cut, I was about 3. I remember that shit like I was 13. Hair messing up the place, tears dripping down my face. Same thought from my pops, like, how could you betray me? Hey, but I never let it faze me. I never knew it then that my hair is what'll make me. Said long hair on a man looks lazy. Couldn't understand that it represented bravery. I never knew it then, but I do now. I stand out in a crowd cause my skin brown. Now I keep my hair down and I whip it all around like it's part of my regalia. Flowing at a powwow. Long hair don't care, I say it proudly. Long hair don't care, man, I say loudly. We the first of the nation with beauty all around us. Long black hair, boy, tell me how you found us. Tell me how you found us.
Tell me little something about your hair, my cousin. Go!
The thing about my hair is that I grow it cause I love it. And I'm sick of hearing people asking when I'm gonna cut it. You're a native undercover like the Indian in the cupboard. And I'm Johnny Redcorn, I'm a bad boy.
He's a bag of
and that's been me ever since birth. Oh, what you heard? I've been called worse. Long hair don't care, man. I'm sick of your opinions. I'ma do me. I'm a motherfucking Indian.
Long hair, long hair. Don't care, don't care. If anybody liking what we doing, what we telling, man, this long hair don't care. Long hair, long hair. Don't care, don't care. Type of way about my name, what we say, long hair, don't care.
When you see me on the street, I notice how you look at me. It's like I'm walking into Tiffany's. You can tell yourself you don't see my ethnicity.
Okay.
But your eyes say it differently. That's how it's been and this is how it will be.
And you know,
this ain't no epiphany. Even I'm sick of me, the vanity is killing me. This bass short's getting to my head. Something's gotta give, but what's new? Is it the brown skin, black flow, or tattoos? Or the fact that I'm in public, sipping on a brew? Someone tell me what's the difference between me and you.
Let me think about it.
I ain't got a clue, but I flex on them haters like bamboo. I've been called a dirty bush, but it ain't true. Long hair, don't care, no shampoo. I'm a wrestler getting fatter with a mind like skitter scattering. I'm climbing up the ladder talking about what really matters. I got people coming up like, good God. Get your hair cut and get a real job. I'm skin, new outlaws. I don't rock a gold chain, I rock a bear claw.
Hair, long hair. Don't care, don't care. If you feel the type of way about me, name what we say. Long hair, don't care. Doing what we tell them, man, it's long hair, don't care. Long hair, long hair. Don't care, don't care. If you feel the type of way about me, name what we say, long hair, don't care.
Morphs, concrete, border, brick, sharpened plasma malls on that vision quest. It's a brown bottle, tall white mouth, and it burns the spirit, drowns the voices I can't hear. Music keeps the mind coherent, I inherit everything, stereotype, smoking on that peace pipe. Government, we are the fight, they want to know my blood type. Some things change, some the same. I kept my cool, no way, I maintain.
We won't stop till we break these chains. Break these chains to the touch, they feel cold. Thinking back on history, everything we're told. We became the wicked red men, tombstone red unknown. Electric Indians, neon when I glow. I will not stop, will not call this home. My rock is something different. Running through life's catadromo, yeah. We're electric, voltage high, it's blown. We resist it like the ohm. I charge my flow, my current so, so electric. Neon when I glow, I-M-I-N-D-I-A-N. Electric Indians, leaves turn red, they fall back down. The soil claims us all, fueled by this thing called change. Silly, but it's not so strange. Electric Indians, neon when I glow, I-M-I-N-D-I-A-N. Electric Indians.
That was Indian Nick with Electric Indians. And before that, Snotty Nose Rez Kids with Long Hair Don't Care. I love that song. It's one of my favorite songs. Coming up next, we're going to bring it down just a little bit here with Nako Bear and Medicine for the People, Vultures of Culture.
It all starts to make sense. It all starts to make sense. With all these omens we've been calling it in, It all starts to make sense. All my thoughts, and particularly my prayers, have not forgotten the indigenous, for the western man been working so hard against us. With his western medicine and his land management and his fences on. For the way he protects and the way he preserves and every way he neglects the people to gain first, you know, the same ones that he massacred. Youth definitely seems to be in favor of the western man's invasion. See him pumping fear like an ivy, spreading it like a disease, and all the while building a clueless army of God-fearing youth with no knowledge of the truth, and their selfishness is so ugly, and it all starts to make sense. Who we gotta talk to if we wanna survive this mess? It all starts to make sense. Itty bitty economy based on geography, fueled by spectators and their money and their need for things that will not last. So go on, build a hotel, a gift shop in the wilderness. Making a profit, capitalizing on it, and all the while trampling on everything that is sacred, and it all starts to make sense. Why the western man destroys things he doesn't understand, It all starts to make sense. All these patterns and wasteful destructive practices. Thank you.
photo, photo. Living like a third world country inside this country. Help the government to put the people in poverty, and it bothers me when the people are going hungry and going for companies that got the government full of groceries. It's disgusting how you can do nothing and complain about the situation in which you're living, and it all starts to make sense. Vultures are culture and they're picking on all my friends, uh-huh. It all starts to make sense. All indigenous and present men, mm-hmm. Well, I dedicate my life to the people who need the light. Help them rise above the scam on the land and their lives. And I'm cutting like a knife all the lies by the slide. Independent of this democracy is really worth the fight. My request is reasonable, a sharp, undefeatable ambitious, deep moving towards solutions that are feasible. It's unbelievable, all the slow moving people, they could care less just as long as they are comfortable. Man, it's unforgivable because the condition now are critical. Whether or not you're ready, we are now approaching the pinnacle. It's difficult to say exactly what to do, but the change begins with me, and I'll reflect it back to you and you and you and you, and use your ability to choose. Come on, man, make the movement move. It all starts to make sense. It all starts to make sense. With all these omens and the moon phase we're in, uh-huh. It all starts to make sense. Well, I dedicate my life to the people who need the light. Help them rise above the scam on the land and their lives. And I'm cutting like a knife all the lies by the slice. Independent of this democracy is really worth the fight. My request is reasonable, a tribe undefeatable. Ambitious, deep moving towards solutions that are feasible. It's unbelievable, all the slow moving people. They can care less just as long as they are comfortable. Man, it's unforgivable because the conditions now are critical. Whether or not you're ready, we are now approaching the pinnacle. It's difficult to say exactly what to do, but the change begins with me, and I reflect it back to you and you and you and you and you and you. Use your ability to choose. It all starts to make sense. It all starts to make sense. It all starts to make sense. It all.
There is no way to say on how you make me feel in the grandest of ways. These words I have to say ain't like anything you ever heard in your day. Straight spitting my ways, this is how I play. Live my life in the realest of way. See how I do me is in what I see. Yo, you're just like me, so happy to be upon the scene. This is what I mean. You live super long and kept yourself strong. Now in these times, I can spit these ill rhymes and committing no crimes. Yo, you did us good, this is how we could straight rap herself. Your knowledge is my wealth, so respect is dealt, and the love is felt, without a doubt. No more screaming shouts, time to let this out. Missy M, Missy I, yeah, steps in white summer, two steps, and I know hide the troll and cut sneak what's nama. Done a mistake, steps in white summer, two steps, and I know hide the troll and cut sneak what's nama. Now what you gotta see is you and me be living in the times that they was living for. Now it's our turn to give it just a little more. It's our turn to spit what we learn and make a burn upon the spot. Believe it or not, we the future of history. So stop living your life like it were a mystery. You know who you gotta be. Yo, just take a look at me. Little Miss Christy Lee, CM family. That's a secret, you gotta keep it down on lock. Show them what you got. We the ones that they was talking about. Without a doubt, time to let this out. Just be yourself and create your own well, own well, own well. The CM, the CI, yeah. Steps in white summer, two steps, and I know. Hide the troll and cut sneak what's nama. Done a mistake. Steps in white summer, two steps, and I know. Hide the troll and cut sneak what's nama. The CM, the CI, yeah. Steps in white summer, two steps, and I know. Hide the troll and cut sneak what's nama. Done a mistake. Steps in white summer, two steps, and I know. Hide the troll and cut sneak what's nama.
That was Experience by Miss Christy Lee, also known as Christine Charles, who is the newest poet laureate for the Vancouver, BC area. So shout out to Miss Christy Lee for being awesome like that. Coming up next, this is Chief Rock with Sacred Gift Song here on Rose City Native Radio.
I wanna know, yeah. are we slowly falling into the sea? Heal my core, hope to soar. Was it our fault? How can we know? Each step we take in the end, it will grow. Green is blue. I pray for help upon the roof. High tide, cars and canoes. Hold me close. The sea. Slowly falling into the sea. Hail my call, hope to a soul. Was it our fault? How could we know? Each step we took in the land, it would grow. Safe tonight, Mother Earth, Father Sky, let us sleep safe tonight, Mother Earth, Father Sky, let us sleep safe tonight, Mother Earth, Father Sky, let us sleep safe tonight.
That was Ray Zaragoza, a fellow Otham, with Red Moon, High Tide. And now, before that was Chief Rock with Sacred Gift Song. Now it's time for Teepee Talk. Heya, okay. We're going to start Teepee Talk here with DJ Yellow Horse, Nick Yellow Horse. We're going to listen to this clip and we'll be right back.
Indigenous children were adopted into largely non-Indigenous. An estimated 20,000 Indigenous children were adopted into largely non-Indigenous homes from the 1950s to the 1980s. It's become known as the 60s scoop. Friday in Saskatoon, a federal court judge approved a compensation package. It includes $750 million for survivors, $50 million for a healing foundation, and $75 million in legal fees. Some survivors say they've worked for years to be recognized, and this deal will provide closure for them and their families.
I'm feeling my ancestors very strong right now. I'm feeling alive.
Others are critical of the deal. They say Métis people were excluded. They say lawyers are getting too much of the money. And they say the $50,000 maximum compensation per person will never come close to the cultural damage done to them and their families.
I wish I could get it back. I wish I could get it back for my kids, for my grandchildren. Teach them how to dance, sing powwow songs, go do berries, pray, chicken dances, sun dances, all of that kind of stuff.
Only one step remains before the money can be disbursed. An Ontario judge overseeing a similar lawsuit in that province will also have to agree. Jason Warwick, CBC News, Saskatoon.
Joining me today, Nick Yellowhorse. Nick?
Yes.
Oh.
Hello.
Nick?
Hello.
There he is.
There I am.
Oh my goodness.
Hey.
Hey.
So, yeah. big news happening. Really huge news happening. So, the recording you just heard didn't really give a number, so I want to break it down a little bit more. It's $875 million in the settlement, $750 million for the estimated 20,000 survivors, $50 million for a foundation, and then $75 million for the lawyers' fees. So that gives a little insight on why people are upset on spending so much on a lawyer. I mean, that is a lot of money, especially paying that 75 versus the 50 for a foundation. For everyone who is affected by this is really upsetting. It goes in to tell how each person had about 3 minutes to give their story, and only if it really pertained to the matter at hand, and if it was, I believe they said something like, if it was something you could save for the foundation to be archived later, they're just going to gloss over you. They were expecting about 10 minutes, cut down to 3, interrupting people, interrupting elders, and all around not a really great feeling for those who were at the hearing and who are survivors of this situation. I mean, if you think about how you're being paid $50,000 because your entire life was changed, do you think that is a adequate value? $50,000 for your entire life, culture, heritage, and identity stripped from you.
I think that's something that a lot of those folks are struggling with, and I can completely understand. So for those who may have, I haven't talked about it a ton on the show in a while, but those of you who are not familiar, I am an adoptee. I was raised by white folks. I was adopted by white folks at birth and did not find out about my indigenous heritage until I was 18. So coming from an adoptee's perspective with this, it is kind of mixed feelings. I mean, $50,000 is a lot, but again, like, that's putting money, it's putting a price tag on your life. It's already weird enough if you really think about it, right? Like, I've had conversations with my mom, jokingly, of course, but the reality being is I have a brother. My brother is white. My brother was adopted. My adoption was a private adoption through a lawyer. My little brother's adoption was through an adoption agency, an international adoption agency. He could have come from anywhere in the world, and he came from Portland, Oregon. but it was interesting because my little brother, who was born in, I feel horrible, I can't remember, 94, cost more than I did in 1989. And we would joke about that. And it was a little bit more spendy because they went through an agency as opposed to going through a lawyer. But just even then, right? Like comparing prices of babies, a brown baby versus a white baby, or even just babies, you know, how much money are you spending on babies? It's just weird to think about. So there was already a price put on our lives beforehand. Now with the 60 scoop, it was a little bit different. So with the 60 scoop, and by the way, this didn't just happen in Canada. This happened in the United States as well. We will post it on our Facebook page. There was a photo of a letter from, oh goodness, like the 1950s or 40s or something around there. That was from, so what happened is the churches would set up these adoptions. So the churches would set up a church on the reservation and they would watch families and they would see which families were struggling or had too many kids or whatever and set up these adoptions and connect these white families with the children and arrange this. And so there were letters from boarding schools and churches and things. And there's one that's been going around the internet recently that was basically like, oh, you know, we have this little girl that would be perfect for you. And you know what? You seem like good God-fearing people. So we're not even going to, you know, ask any questions. We just need $10 and she's all yours. Mm. And so this was another part of a forced assimilation of genocide happening to our people. It's part of the kill the Indian, save the man thing, where not only did they kidnap our children and place them in boarding schools, but they they literally were snatching kids up on the res and putting them in a truck and giving them to white folks, saying, you're living with these people now. They tried to get them at a very young age. And so a lot of these children didn't necessarily, they were just given away for free because, you know, to the next white family, the next Christian white family that they could find. And it's terrifying. And so these survivors hold a lot of heavy things and a lot of hurt, a lot of abuse. And it continues to this day, of course.
Absolutely. I mean, if you, sorry to interrupt, but I mean, if you think about it, these, a lot of them were being taken, given to these people, and then given to foster care, and then the whole boarding school thing. And it's just this atmosphere of hating where you came from. And then you're giving them a dollar amount this day to say, oh, here's some money to, you know, sorry you hate yourself and that you never really experienced your culture and who you are and where you came from, and get to relish in that compared to so many other people that have that ability. And there are so many stories that you hear where it was like one of the siblings were taken, but the other one thankfully was able to stay with the family. And you're just like, this is insane how their lives are so much different and how this could create such a hardship on a family, because you have a situation like this occur without your knowledge sometimes. And $50,000, I can't get off that number, because I mean, for some people that's just 1 year's paycheck, and you're just like, oh yeah, here you go. Granted, I'm not saying it's not a lot of money, not that at all. It's just saying that seems such like a small amount to give to somebody for a lifetime of change and a lifetime of grief.
Absolutely. And it's very much a settler point of view of fixing things. Putting a dollar amount and using that as a band-aid to make up for something. That's why, I forget. There's that land that's in trust for a tribe here in the U.S. And it's like worth billions of dollars. And there's this billions of dollars in trust for this tribe. And the tribe to this day refuses it, because then they would be accepting money for their traditional ancestral lands. You know, and they refuse because, no, we're not going to put a price on this. What you have done and what this culture, this land, our people mean to us, like, you can't put an amount on that. And it's kind of funny, really, if you think about it, because so I do a lot of advocacy. Not on here, of course, but in my day job, I do advocacy for adoptees, Native adoptees, and returning to your culture. And a lot of the time I have been told, you know, this lived experience, that's so invaluable. You can't put a price on that. You can't get a degree in lived experience. Like, your experience is invaluable. And so thinking about that, of like, these folks, a lot of these folks from the 60s scoop, now granted, it didn't just happen in the 60s, right? Like, it happened in the 80s, it happened in the 90s. Like, the last boarding school closed in, like, the 90s. Think about that, the 90s. And there are still boarding schools that are being run today. There's one in Oregon. But these, they've changed over time. Some, you know, at the same time, though, there's still a lot of debate about whether or not these schools are safe. And we've talked a little bit about that in the past. But a lot of these folks are elders now. They have children that grew up with this intergenerational trauma that their parents went through. So we have a second generation growing up, a third generation growing up without any access to culture, and they're carrying this pain throughout their family. And so how do you put a price on 3, 4, 5 generations now? You know, like, not just the generation that was taken. You add the generation that was taken, and then they have kids, and then their kids have kids, because it's been long enough for their kids to have kids.
Yeah.
So you have this entire multiple generation thing affected by this, and you're putting the price tag of $50,000.
And a lot of those who are survivors and were involved in this case had said they are upset because they felt this was really rushed to get a deal, that it was all about the numbers and all about trying to get that end goal of the settlement money rather than saying, let's bring this to court and actually figure it all out. And that this settlement was just a way to say, okay, we paid you, now can you hush about your trauma?
Mm-hmm. And we've seen this happen time and time again in various situations, not just with Indigenous folks, but with women, you know, who have been sexually assaulted, with victims of violence, domestic violence. I mean, we've seen it all over the place. Another part of this that plays a factor, of course, is that Canada is really trying hard to do this whole truth and reconciliation thing right now. And it's very, very rushed, and it's been criticized by a lot of natives up in Canada, because it's basically Canada trying to put a multiculturalism band-aid on top of genocide, and it's obviously not working. And so I feel like that was a big factor in trying to rush this and trying to make it look good, because at the end of the day, you know, like Nick said, this is like, okay, we paid you off, you know, we said we're sorry, now can you stop talking about it? And the fact of the matter is, we're never going to stop talking about it, because it's important to learn and to remember that this happened and that this is very, very real, and that this, the effects are still felt today in a strong, strong way. And nothing, no amount of money, no amount of you know, official apologies from government will ever bring back that culture. I will not magically know my culture if the president of the United States apologizes for genocide today. You know, like that, I will never get that back. And it is, I can understand the frustration, because not only are you going through this trauma and this disconnect, right? You go through the imposter syndrome phase. You go through all of this stuff trying to connect to this family you don't even know. Like, people who are blood related to you are strangers. And it's really intimidating and it's really scary, and you feel like you're not worthy. And it's a very much an uphill battle. You have to fight to even learn the smallest amount. I grew up and live out of state. My tribe is in Arizona. It is so hard. It is so hard for me to get even an ounce of my culture sometimes. And I'm very blessed that I have a lot of folks from the area who are open with me and willing to share that. But at the same time, like, I still go through those feelings of imposter syndrome. I still go through those feelings of unworthiness, of unsureness. You know, luckily my parents were hippies. That's the reason I have my long hair, is they were giant hippies from California. So I was lucky enough to have parents who wanted to embrace my race and have this kind of multicultural family. But a lot of these folks who were placed in this home were placed in this home with parents who were under the impression of, oh, we are going to civilize you. Where you came from was not good. You came from a dangerous place. You came from dangerous people. All your family are drug addicts, or all your family are drunks, or this or that. You've been told all these negative things. Even me, though, even when I was raised in a positive environment like that, my head was filled with stereotypes because that's all my family knew. There are pictures of me from Thanksgiving dressed as Pocahontas because that's all my family knew. These white folks didn't know a whole lot about Natives. And we're not taught a whole lot about Natives in this country, to be honest. So when you have those two things combined, you don't know much, and all you know is stereotypes and misinformation, or you've just been told your entire life that these people are trash, that you're not worthy, and then you're like, wow, do I even want to be a part of this? Because, you know, I've been told they're not good people, they're not safe people. And then how are you supposed to feel about where you came from? You feel ashamed, you feel embarrassed, you don't feel good enough, and you just want to assimilate and just let that part die. Some folks truly do not want to know, have no interest in passing along that culture, and that continues that genocide. And and so looking at all of this, right, what price would you really put on that? And again, you can have all the money in the world, that doesn't fix it, that doesn't take away the decades of shame, that doesn't take away the fear of not understanding who you are, of the foundation of your identity being stripped away from you. It doesn't fix any of that. And I completely understand their frustration. Other survivors feel like it's something, you know, even just having it be acknowledged in the first place is huge. But, you know, there's definitely something to be said about how we need to stop applauding the bare minimum. You know, acknowledging racism is a thing. I'm not going to give you a cookie for that. That's not something I'm going to praise you for. That's something, you know, that's the bare minimum. We should already know about this. We should already be talking about this, and we should be talking about it loud. So, those are just my feels about it.
I do want to interject and say something about, for those who had grown up outside of the culture, off the res because of specific circumstances like this, I'm speaking directly to those natives out there that feel this elitism that just because they grew up on the res doesn't mean they shouldn't accept somebody who is of their tribe but didn't grow up the same way as you did, because that is also another hurdle that these people have to go across, because they aren't seen as somebody within their group. They are seen as an outsider. They're seen as the family that they grew up with.
That is a really good point to say. In our culture, it's a big deal. Who's your family? Who are you related to? What district are you from? What res are you from? You know, it's huge. And I still struggle with that today, meeting other authors and having them be like, oh, what district are you from? Oh, who's your family? And me being like, I legit don't know, dude. Like, I can't tell you. I don't know. And it's no fault of mine. I mean, it's just my circumstance. I didn't come out of my mother's womb and be like, oh, hey, I'd like to go with the white family, please. Like, I didn't choose this life. Thug life chose me. But, you know, so just be mindful of that and understanding that this is part of our history and our family are trying to come home. And it's really hard to do that sometimes. And I think it's part of some of the stuff that we may take for granted. One of the things I say is, you know, non-adoptees, non-foster folks sometimes do take for granted that they have this foundation of identity underneath them. They know where they came from. I really envy families who have these, you know, I go into their homes and they have these walls full of pictures of generation after generation of their family. I really truly envy that. And that is something that a lot of folks take for granted, is knowing where they come from, knowing who they come from. And I don't have that luxury. And a lot of people like me don't have that luxury of knowing that, or having the paperwork, or having this or having that. And it's just important to keep that in mind. And yeah, and what Nick said is true. It doesn't make you any better just because you were raised in your culture. And, you know, part of that attitude of, oh, I'm full blood, or oh, I'm whatever, is very colonized. It's part of what they did to us. And so it's just something to be mindful of. And so have patience with folks. Of course, they'll always be the culture vultures for sure. But, you know, I would recommend being open at first and understanding that this is our history. So there are plenty of folks out there. And you know, you can tell when the ones who truly, truly are trying to connect and really want to understand, and are not trying to do this for the government benefits or whatever they may think. Most of us just really want to be able to find our place and find our home and know where we come from. And that's it. I don't want anything fancy. I'm not trying to get per cap. I'm not trying to get any of that stuff. I'm not going to college anytime soon. Like, I just want to have my culture and be able to represent my people in a good way. That's all. I don't know. But anyways, shout out to those folks from the 60s Scoop, and we'll be reporting more on it as things develop for sure. Canada seems to really be trying to rush us, like I said, and I think, you know, it's kind of petty at this point of just like, oh, we're doing this, but you know what, the United States isn't, so we're better than them anyway. We're doing the truth and reconciliation stuff. It's not fixing anything. It's not. I don't even think natives really are super jazzed about it or want it. So yeah, this is part of just putting a Band-Aid on a much larger issue. and not wanting to face the reality, the full brunt of the reality of what they have done, and saying the G word and acknowledging the G word. Because if you once you fully acknowledge that, then that's giving away a bit of power. If you think about it, acknowledging that, yeah, we did genocide, this is stolen land. And then if you think about, okay, how do we actually, like, for real, make up for this? Number one is giving that land back, and they don't want to do that. They're giving up a lot, like, that would be giving up some sort of power and control over the country, to acknowledge what they've done to indigenous people and trying to make it right. So instead, they're trying to do it their way, which is not working. Any final thoughts, Nick?
No, I think I got everything in.
Okay. So that was Teepee Talk. Hey-ya, hoka, hey-ya, hey. All right. Coming up next here on Rose City Native Radio. This is 1491's featuring Bear Fox with Rich Girl. Enjoy.
When I was a little girl, when I was a little girl, when I was a little girl, I helped my mother with the chores. Then I would go to the river to swim. We'd play tag and swim on a swing. I loved to feel the hot summer heat. Couldn't stand shoes upon my feet. I am the youngest of 14. I am a rich girl, can't you see? My father was a farmer, hardworking. He worked all day till the evening. His hands were calloused and full of strength. He didn't speak very much English. He was a well-respected man. Knew his medicines and was very grand. He took care of his family. I am a rich girl, can't you see? My mother was the kindest you could meet. Her eyes they sparkled and her smile so sweet. She loved babies, held them to her cheek. She made everyone feel unique. She was known for her butter and cream. So throughout a community, she made sure we had extra money. I am a rich girl, can't you see? Our house, it was very old. In the winter, it was so cold. Wood-filled wood stove for our heat. Bundled in blankets, we would sleep. People thought that we were poor because of the holes upon our floor. But I'm a rich girl, can't you see? So much love in our family. Now I have a family of my own. I try my best to guide them as they grow. Try my best to keep them from harm. Tell them stories about the farm. When it's time to turn on the lights, I tell them I love them and good night. Then I hold my husband tight. I know everything is going right. Both my parents have passed away, but I know I'll see them someday. I am grateful for my family. I am a rich girl, can't you see? I am grateful for my family. I'm a rich girl, can't you see? So much love in our family. I'm a rich girl, can't you see?
Thank you.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in. You can find us on Facebook at Rose City Native Radio. You can reach us with music, events, and more at pdxnativeradio@gmail.com. Again, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week, Indian Country. Stay cool. Stay native.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operation and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Policy and Governance Committee meets on the third Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our